Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, free cash flow. I will do part of just the first part of that lecture before we have the quiz, and then the quiz will proceed, and when you're done with it, you're free to go. But you want to show me your show one of us that you've completed the quiz, that you've closed out the quiz before you leave the auditorium here today. Just show it to us and you're fine to go. You don't have to sign out. You'll have to sign in a little bit here, but you don't have to sign out. Just show us the quiz that you finished it, and then you're good to go. Pardon? We'll sign you out later, yeah. We'll take care of that. But you're all good. Then on Wednesday, I will finish up Chapter 12. And then Monday of next week is first part of it is some review. Well, some review. And then you'll have your last quiz, Quiz 8, which is like the miniature final. It gets you a sort of a broad scope of to help you prep for the final. And then Wednesday, I'm just reviewing the final with you. You'll do your student evaluations, course evaluations first, and then I'm just going to roll with the whole prep for the final. That'll be next Wednesday. So, and then Wednesday of this week, I'll finish chapter 12 when I don't get done today. But before we do anything else, of course, we have to look at the numbers, and the numbers are it's sort of strange. Eastern side of the planet, Asia, had a sort of a really tepid day. It was just not really spectacular at all, just kind of up and down a little bit, but everything finished up, interestingly enough. But if you notice those spark charts along there, you'll notice a lot of them were rising, and then they kind of tailed off at the end of the day. And then in Western Europe and in Great Britain, it was kind of a brutal day today. It wasn't way down, but it was enough that you saw that there was a bearish sentiment over on that side of the Atlantic. No enthusiasm at all for what's going on in the world around us. But there is a quiet period right now, and once it gets quiet like that, you can pretty much guarantee that the markets are not going to get excited, but they're not going to drop a lot. And that's what's happening right now. Here in the United States, it was, there's still trading, but it's nothing spectacular. The markets are down a little bit, but not anything significant at all. The Dow is down just a tiny fraction. The S&P was down a little bit. Nah, that's not much, 0.20. But the thing is, though, that there's a lot of red there, which does concern us, that this is definitely a mildly bear day. And then if you go down here, crude oil has definitely come down in price. So you should see that reflected at the gas pumps here in the next week or so, that we might get back down to $2.79 a gallon, somewhere around there. It's a little speculative now because the Middle East is like a powder keg. Any minute it could just explode again. The price of oil goes through the roof again. But right now it's very quiet over there, maybe a little too quiet, but we'll see. One thing I did want to point out here is the 10-year bond has gone down in yield, and that's some good news. That's lower. It's not where we would want it. We'd love to see it below 4%, but it has come down. It had gotten as high as 4.40% on the benchmark 10-year treasury, and it's come down from there somewhat, but it's definitely lower, and that should help us. We are definitely in recessionary territory, but any help we can get from lower interest rates is most welcome right now. And one way or the other. Forgive me here. And if you wonder why I'm doing this all the time, it's because I had cataracts taken out of my eyes, and so they're I have to keep pouring that stuff in. So bear with me when I do that. Now look at this. Well, that's weird. Those are huge. Okay, as you can see, the map is red and green, and so it's kind of hard to say, well, bull day, bear day, it's sort of a mixed day, nothing really spectacular. So we can take some comfort in that, that it's at least not a massively bear day. We had a string of bull days last week, and that was kind of that optimism you get on Wall Street for whatever is happening in the present time. And so they're excited, and they push the prices up, and they let whatever's going to happen tomorrow happen. So you can't take that kind of stuff too seriously on a given day. Anyway, I want to show you something here. I'm going to do a few last of these. I talk about something visually that is sort of like helps you decide on investments. One thing I want to do here is I want to do Costco. Costco. Now, today it had a little bit of a bear day. It wasn't anything massive. The whole market was down. Costco was down. And if you can look here a little bit, you'll see that the beta is about the market, about almost 1.00. So if the market is a little bit grouchy, on an average day, Costco would be about the same as the market. And so it's, you know, just one of those days. But notice something interesting, this kangaroo pattern. It just kept bouncing, and finally it gave up and went, took a plunge right there. But I want to show you the 5-year on it. Here is something that, now there's some speculation, and it's not a matter of finding the truth. And that's out there. I let philosophers do that kind of stuff. But if you look at Costco, you notice how it had this run-up. See this? Over about a year and a half, it had this run-up. It had been floating at this lower level, and then it ran up, and now it's floating again. One way to interpret that is that Costco is becoming a mature, old company. And as such, it's not going to have spectacular rises. It maybe once in a while, but you're kind of seeing this period when it's leveling off as it begins to narrow its search from day to day, week to week or whatever, month to month, for intrinsic value. The market is figuring it's right about where it should be right now. And so you wouldn't expect that this company is going to have some giant run-up, unless it does something big. Now, Costco is already in 14 countries. Maybe it will announce that it's going to expand and do 5 more or something like that. But for the time being, its business model is very tight, very well disciplined, and they are clearly saying, we're in a zone, this is where we will stay for the foreseeable future. And hence the price of the stock just kind of levels out and says, okay, this gives us time to be a little bit more accurate in determining intrinsic value. And you'll see that in these companies where they will have these big run-ups or drops or whatever, and then they will stabilize. And that's when it's not going to be some hugely successful investment. Most of your wins on a company like this will be in the dividends that they pay, not in price run-ups. And so you just kind of look at this pattern. It's not doing something in Excel. It's not using Python to generate an algorithm. It's just look at it, think about the company, where it is in its life cycle. And Costco is in a very stable part of its life cycle. It's getting older. It's getting management is conservative, and that's what you want out of a successful corporation. Now, let me take you on another one here. Procter & Gamble. PG. Now, Procter & Gamble has taken a huge whack today. 2% down is a lot down. And as you can see, this is kind of an odd pattern. Well, not odd, I shouldn't say that. But it just kept selling and selling. There was selling all through the day so far. And finally, it's cooled off. In the real world of Wall Street and the financial markets like this, a lot of the traders oftentimes are herd mentality. And that is even more so with the programmed trading that happens. It's when the algorithms, and now the artificial intelligence, starts making the trades instead of traders. But they do the same thing. They watch each other to see where the herd is going. An old axiom of Wall Street, a rule of Wall Street, is never fight the herd. Don't run, well, it's going down, so I'm going to buy. Don't do that. You're asking for it. Easily 95 times out of 100, you will lose because the herd is just going to stampede you to death. So when you see this kind of just sort of drizzling its way down like this, just ride it. Just go with it. Don't buy at when it's in this kind of a mood, because the herd, whether the herd is right or wrong, doesn't matter. The herd will win. And if you fight the herd, you will lose. And so keep that in mind as you are doing investments, that old rule, I've seen it work too many times to disagree with it. You just, if the herd is going in the down direction, just go with it. Sell some of the asset, sell some of your investment, but certainly don't buy in. You just wait to see when the herd will stop running, and then maybe you can buy in. But in a case like this, it looks like this was one of those days where just stay out of the way of the stampede as it went down. And like I said, this is the way traders think oftentimes. And it's also the way artificial intelligence thinks. It does not, they are constantly in watching each other. As much as they watch humans, they watch each other and they talk to each other. In fact, just to give you an emphasis on that, we have a problem with artificial intelligences creating their own indecipherable language. They know we can't understand it, and they talk in it to each other. And then we program them, don't do that, and then they figure out how to go around the programming. So they talk to each other too. So when they're trading, they're looking at each other, and if they start seeing a couple of their part of their networks, neural networks, starting to sell, they'll do the same thing as them. And then others will watch and see that they're doing it, and it becomes a herd mentality, just like human traders. Keep that in mind. Let me take this off board, talk to you a little bit about free cash flow. I have a spreadsheet that will help you with this. However, I still have to tweak it because as it stands now, it's more for an advanced class, and I want to make a simpler version of it for you, a tab where you can go for FIL 240 to do this, to automate some of the calculations of it. But I start with a couple of pointers, and I've said this through the semester, is that we in finance do not care about profit. We don't care really about retained earnings. The famous story, I might have already mentioned it, but we love to tell this story because it apparently really has happened a few times. There was a meeting of executives of a rather substantial corporation, and they had a couple of their new junior executives there at the meeting, and they were talking about how they were going to fund a project that they were considering. And one of the junior executives piped up and said, well, why don't we just fund it out of retained earnings? And the chief financial officer just turned to him. They were standing up and just kind of discussing things. And he said, son, I want you to go out, get to your computer, and I want you to find a checking account that says retained earnings. And then we can write a check out of that account. Go find that retained earnings checking account. Of course, he kind of looked a little silly. He said, I don't think we have one, sir. He said, that's all right. There is no such thing as a retained earnings account. It's an accounting entity. It doesn't have anything to do with the real world of what we have to spend. That comes from something called free cash flow. And this, of course, the lesson there is that accounting is made to display numbers for people to look at and to consider as sort of a vague representation of what is really happening in a corporation. And you've heard me talk about this, and because it's one of those burning memories in me, is those nights, Thursday nights, when I would have to write the checks for payroll. I was profitable. I had had a penny stock house in Ohio, and I had converted that to a consulting company, and I had some employees, and that Thursday night when I had to cut payroll, there wasn't enough money in the bank to pay them. So I would write the checks, and I would then take off to the bank the first thing in the morning and pull money out of my own savings account and put it into the checking account of my company. That was all I could do. There wasn't anything else. In other words, profitability meant nothing when you were there sweating bullets to pay your make your payroll. Free cash flow is what matters. Cash is king, as we say. In other words, do you have enough cash left over to pay your interest payments, your payroll, and all those other things, and to make pay dividends? Those don't come out of retained earnings. There's no such thing as retained earnings. And again, I go back to that example I told you at first. Find a corporation's retained earnings checking account, and then you can write checks out of that. And if you can't find it, well, that's because it doesn't exist, and it never did exist. It's like depreciation expense. It doesn't exist. There is no place you write a check to depreciation. And that's what free cash flow does. What we care about are actual capital expenditures. How much do you pay out of pocket to have machinery? And if you don't have it out of pocket, that's when you go to the debt markets or to the stock markets and issue securities to raise money because your free cash flow was insufficient for the task at hand. So when I write this free cash flow formula down for you, it has actual meaning. We're trying to take this out of, we're taking the accounting numbers, and then we are rearranging and tweaking them so that they are more realistically reflecting the actual free cash flow situation. And on that note, I'll make a couple of points here, is that we see companies, when you have free cash flow that's positive, that means that they have the money to write checks to their, pay their interest expense to their bondholders, maybe make a nice dividend payment to their stockholders, and all of that kind of stuff. If they don't have positive free cash flow, the question is, where are they getting the money to stay in business? How could they possibly have negative free cash flow, especially for a couple of years, and still be there? We've seen some spectacular examples of companies that had negative free cash flow year over year over year. Now, some of them do die, but some of them just keep going, and then it becomes not a finance question, it becomes a forensic question. Where in the hell are they getting these billions of dollars? They're in the hole every year, negative $3 billion. Negative $2.5 billion, negative $4 billion. How do they keep going? It's nowhere in their financial statements that it's showing a silo up to match that silo down of cash And so then we begin to ask questions. And sometimes the answers are, okay, I get it, I kind of. But in a lot of cases, we don't have an answer where that money came from. And then sometimes when we finally find the answer, it's really disturbing. An example, a case in point, are the 10 big banks, those biggest banks. In the 2000s era, those banks were bleeding free cash flow. They were walking dead. And idiots like me were saying, they're going under. It's in a year, 2 years, they cannot keep surviving. And yet they did. And we looked like asses because the SEC documents, sure enough, every year they were back there looking like everything was okay, even though that pit was there. And so we looked like fools calling for, saying that they were about to die. Turned out, we found out accidentally that they had this vast pipeline of money coming in from the Fed and from the U.S. Treasury that were keeping them afloat because they were too big to fail. So they had to keep getting money funneled in. The SEC knew this was going on. Obviously, they knew it was going on, and they were surviving. At the time that it was finally disclosed what they had been up to, they had had about $7.7 trillion funneled into them. Since that time, over the next 10 years, that's probably easily $15 to $20 trillion has funneled into those companies. They could not survive on their own. There's a vast, huge corporation that for years was bleeding free cash flow, and yet it just kept going. And we've never answered the question of how it survived for all those years with negative free cash flow. Now it's reporting positive free cash flow, but that still doesn't answer the question, were they able to write checks when you have billions of dollars in negative free cash flow year over year over year? So that's why this is important. Free cash flow tells us the real story. And then if you need to, you can start asking questions. Whether or not you get logical answers, that's another matter entirely. But anyway, let me write a formula here on the board for you. Dig around in here and see if I got a... Oh, is this one a good one? Okay, fine. Free cash flow. And I've done this one before, but I'll do it again here. A couple of things about this is that financial statements can sometimes leave us not sure of whether or not a number is included in the accounting statements. That's especially true of depreciation expense. Now, some companies in their income statement actually put a line, depreciation expense, what we call DEPEX. Others, it's not there. And we are left with this question, well, is it there in one of the other cost lines and they're just not saying it? Or is it not there at all? So that leaves us with a little mystery sometimes about whether or not DEPEX is included in operating income. First things first, free cash flow, FCF. It's going to be your revenue minus your operating costs plus DEPEX. These two together constitute the cost side of it. Now, the thing of it is that what we do is we take this times 1 minus T. And depreciation expense is not real. It is not our operating expense. However, we include it because it does create a tax shield. Putting that DEPEX in there protects some revenue from taxation. So we put it in there just long enough to recognize its tax shield. And then we're going to add it back in over here. Now this, in general, right here, this piece right here should be operating income, EBIT. But maybe it is, maybe it isn't, depending upon whether the depreciation expense is in the financial income statement. And that's a little bit speculative sometimes. This animal right here, the operating income times 1 minus T, is what we call NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. That's the first rung on the ladder to the holy grail of free cash flow. As a matter of fact, I think NOPAT is reported by services like Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage, which I'm going to bring up on Wednesday. And you have access to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. It's a subscription service. It costs a fortune. However, as students here at ISU, you've got a subscription to it. And you can get all of this information right there. As a matter of fact, they even report free cash flow. So, no, that's in, it's in the parentheses there. Yeah, I know. So cost plus DEPEX. Gotcha. Okay. Now the next thing we're going to do is add back DEPEX because it didn't really exist. So we have to add that back. It wasn't subtract. We have it in there, taking away from revenue simply because of the tax shield. So we have to add it back in. Now here's the last two pieces. The first is we subtract capital expenditures, CapEx. That's what you really spent. It's not depreciation. You've never written a check. No company has ever written a check to depreciation expense. When you buy capital equipment, property, plant, equipment, that kind of stuff, that is real cash flow going away, vanishing, hopefully to a good cause. Okay, and then the last one is the change in net operating working capital. Now this piece right here, operating, means that you should be looking only at operating things. But mostly we kind of just look at straight up working capital. Now, net operating working capital, NOWC, is your current operating assets minus your current operating liabilities. And like I said, there are current assets that aren't operating, and there are current liabilities that aren't operating. However, in general, they are small enough that we can just say current assets minus current liabilities and not worry about it. Now, the change in net operating working capital would be the net operating working capital in the current period minus the net operating working capital in the previous period. In other words, have your current assets grown more than your current liabilities, or have your current liabilities grown more than your current assets? If the change in net operating working capital is positive, then free cash flow falls because your current assets are absorbing more cash than your current liabilities are releasing. On the other hand, if the change in net operating working capital is negative, then free cash flow will rise because your current liabilities are growing faster than your current assets are growing. And so you are releasing cash. Think about it like this. If your current, if your accounts receivable goes up faster than your current liabilities, then that means that you are actually not getting money that you should. If inventory grows fast, it is absorbing free cash flow. So that would mean that free cash flow goes down if this change is positive. It goes up if the change is negative. What I want to do real quick here is I'm going to dig in and, okay, let me fire this. I'll just show you this real quick, and then we'll dig in a little more. Give me this. Yeah, go ahead and sign into Attendance Radar while I'm digging up this. Where is Tesla? There it is. Make sure you sign in, because that's how we'll be able to identify that you are here when you did the quiz. I tried to download that. What happened? Oh, come on. Oh, there it is. There. Okay. Better believe it. I'm gonna do it. He of the cloven hoof will hate me. Okay. Now I'm just showing you this very quickly, and we'll do this more robustly on Wednesday. But have a look here. I've made free cash flow its own sheet. And from what I'm doing here is, where is my income statement? There we go. Of cash flows. There we go. Now, this is a company by the name of Tesla. Now, this one's a couple of years old, but just to show you that what you're doing, that we do a kind of a quick dirty. In the sense that we've got our total revenues over there, and then we just count up all the total costs and assume that depreciation expense is somewhere in here. So that what we want to do is we just pick off total operating income right there, and then we multiply it by 1 minus T. That takes care of that big chunk. Because what we do is we just sort of take it as given that revenue minus cost, operating cost minus depreciation expense is operating income. Whether or not the depreciation expense was in there or not, that we can't always say. However, in order to, and then we take 1 minus 0.21. In order to add it back, we go to the statement of cash flows. And right there is the DEPEX waiting for us. And again, I will do all of this again more robustly. And then for capital expenditures, we go down here from investing activities, purchases of property, plant, and equipment. That number right there. Now you have to be careful because the spreadsheet is already reporting that as a negative. So you don't want to do minus a negative. So if you're bringing that into just a free cash flow formula, you would want to use the absolute value of that number to do it. Let me go back over here and I'll show you. When I'm putting together the free cash flow, you notice that where capital expenditures, I've taken the absolute value of the number from the statement of cash flows. just so I can minus it like the formula says to do. And then for the net operating working capital, what I do is I will take the balance sheet. I said I'll take the balance sheet. Where the hell is my balance sheet? There it is, yeah. And I will take current assets, and I'll just do it right here. So I'll take my total current assets, scoot this a little bit in. I can't see anything on this. There we go. I'll take my total current assets right here. So I'll say that those, I'll take total current assets minus my total current liabilities. So I will take, I'll put it right here. I'll say equals my total current assets right there minus my total current liabilities, which are right there, and I'll get net operating working capital. And then I just scoot it over so I get last year's. And so then I can take that minus that, and that will be the change in net operating working capital. You notice that their net operating working capital increased. That means that there was free cash flow absorbed. Their current assets went up faster than their current liabilities, so free cash flow was sucked in to working capital. So that would be a minus on that one. You go through the rest of it, and we'll go through it on Wednesday, but just as a preview, free cash flow. You see it? That's Tesla. So that gives you an interesting perspective. And then you ask, okay, how did they pay their bills? We'll talk more about that on Wednesday. Right now, I want you to get out your quiz.